This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 9th of May, 2014. Hello, and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper, with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 9th of May, which this week have been edited by Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. Your readers today are Nikki Baring.
Hello.
John Regan.
Hello.
And Lynn Parker.
Hello.
And I am your presenter, Maria Head. The main headlines this week are: killed, just weeks away from getting married. It's a grand day out for Frank at Save Rec event. And council on track to revamp station area. So may we now have the story behind the first headline, please, Nikki.
Killed just weeks away from getting married. Mum of three knocked down in hit and run. A woman from Winchester who was looking forward to marriage and retirement was knocked down and killed as she strolled along a quiet country lane with her fiancé and her son. Gwen Valentine's new life was snatched away in the seconds of a road crash on the Isle of Man that left her with fatal injuries. She was on holiday visiting her son when she was the victim of an alleged hit-and-run incident on Saturday, April the 26th, while walking on the isolated Thult y Wil Road. Mrs. Valentine, 62, a mother of three, has only recently retired from IBM at Hursley and was due to marry her fiancé on June the 21st. Her neighbours in Wavell Way, Stanmore, were unaware and shocked of her death. Donna Standen, 34, a mother of four, said, "We were expecting her back last Sunday. She had recently retired and she said she was looking forward to going there on holiday. It was going to be the first time visiting her son on her own before she had always gone with her other kid. She was very nice. She used to chat to my kids in the garden, so of course it is a shock." Another neighbour, who asked not to be named, said, "She was a very nice person. I used to say hello and have a chat. You don't expect this." Her family released a statement through the police. It said, "Gwen was preparing for her wedding in June, had been retired for just over a week, and her first grandchild was not yet a year old. She was taken in the prime of her life, and all who knew her loved her for her zest for life, humour, fearlessness and compassion. She will be sorely missed." A 30-year-old man was arrested and charged with a number of offences, including causing death by dangerous driving. A second male who had been arrested has been bailed pending further inquiries. The coroner has been informed and an inquest was likely to be opened this week.
And the second headline, please, John.
Yes, it's a grand day out for Frank at Save the Wreck event. And this piece is surrounded by lots of pictures of happy pooches and their even happier owners. Winchester is used to traffic congestion, but it was perhaps the city's first ever dog jam. More than 130 canines paraded in a congested circle at North Walls Park last Sunday as part of the Save the Wreck Fun Day. It was certainly the first ever dog show judged by a fully-fledged pop star. "There is a dog jam. Please keep moving," pleaded the announcer into a megaphone as the dogs and their owners circled Frank Turner. The parade was the highlight of the grand day out at North Walls Park, attended by an estimated 2,500 people. They are campaigning against City Council plans to build a new leisure centre on part of the open space. Mr. Turner pondered the tricky judging task. "I'm quite nervous," he said. "I don't want anybody to be annoyed about this. This is harder than I imagined it would be," he said, resplendent in shades and a T-shirt for Black Flag, the 1980s American hardcore punk band. Edging closer were Dalmatians, Terriers, Pugs, Poodles and, this being Winchester, lots of Labradors. When the first two winners for Waggiest Tail and Best Behaved turned out to be Spaniels, suspicions were raised that perhaps Mr. Turner may be biased. But then the naughtiest dog announced was a Labrador. It had bitten its owner's leg. And the dog most like its owner, a Tibetan Cotton. Mr. Turner told the Chronicle, "I grew up in Winchester and grew up coming to this wreck. So today is very important. It's utterly ridiculous that Winchester City Council is considering building on this." Winner of the dog most like its owner was Jan Smith and 5-year-old Poppy. Miss Smith from Winchester, who was wearing a matching white fur hat, but otherwise looked nothing like Poppy. She said, "It's very exciting. This is Poppy's first competition. She's a little overwhelmed by all the other dogs, but it has been the most amazing turnout. I've never seen so many members of the community pull together. It's vital that we keep this playing field." Event organiser Mike Caldwell said he was delighted with how the day had gone. "It was a fantastic turnout. Frank Turner was a real star, a charming man. It's been a great day." Later, cricket teams played for the King Alfred Trophy, and there were lots of other sports being played, from croquet to canoeing, to show the importance of the park. Its future is set to be an important issue at the City Council elections on May the 22nd. The Council is considering plans to replace the existing leisure centre because the current building is 40 years old and deteriorating fast. Another option is developing a new centre at Bar End.
Thank you, John. And the final headline this week, please, Lynn.
Council on track to revamp station area. Redevelopment could boost jobs and economy. Deluxe Foss offices, homes, shops and car parking could start springing up next to Winchester's railway station as early as next year, a meeting was told. The City Council's Cabinet heard details of how land in a sweep from the Register Office to the Cattle Market car park could be transformed, creating 500 jobs and adding £1 million to the local economy. Councillors were keen to kickstart the station approach development after hearing that a deal to buy land next to the Record Office from Hampshire County Council could be signed in as little as a month. They gave the go-ahead for up to £100,000 to be spent doing the development's initial architectural, archaeological, surveying and costing work so that a more detailed document can be prepared for the Cabinet. The Council has already been approached by a cluster of firms looking to take up office space in the new development, with one wanting to make the city its regional head office, it is claimed. Council leader Keith Wood told Cabinet last Wednesday, "There's an urgency about this for financial reasons. Once we buy the land, we will be paying for it. If we are nowhere near developing it, the Council will have to carry the cost in the interim." Referring to the stalled Silver Hill project, he added, "We can't spend 15 years sorting this one out. If we can't get on with it, it will be the Council's fault. We need to work to make sure the entrance to the city from the railway station is worthy of the city. I don't think anyone could say it is now." One obstacle to the scheme could be that the cattle market is in the middle of the main cemetery used by Romans and early Britons who once lived in Winchester. A full archaeological survey and possible excavation work will be needed before any building work can go ahead. St Paul's resident Karen Barrett, standing as an independent at the City Council elections on May the 22nd, was anxious that the Register Office, once the well-known South Western pub, should not be knocked down to make way for the development. "It is a local landmark. I would hate to see it go," she said. "I would like to see it returned to pub use or a restaurant. Most people living in the area think as I do." Sometimes when you attend meetings like this, people like me feel as though it's been a done deal and the decision's been made. The meeting heard how Council Buildings team does not believe the Register Office has significant relevance in terms of its architectural merit.
That concludes the headlines. And now we continue with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, historical items and first person. This will be followed by announcements and what's on. And the death notices this week begin with Andrews, Scott Lewis Edgar Andrews, died on the 28th of April, aged 92. Billimore, Helen Veronica Billimore, died on the 29th of April, aged 66. Gear, Michael Arthur Gear, died on the 1st of May, aged 90. Hebbard, Sheila June Hebbard, died on the 28th of April, aged 80. Newman, Margaret Rose Newman, died on the 27th of April, aged 82. Noakes, Stella Margaret Noakes, died on the 1st of May, aged 80. Thickness, Patricia Mary Thickness, died on the 26th of April, aged 92. And next we have Christian comment, Lynn.
The headline to this is, "It's so good to feel connected." Yesterday we lost one of our dogs. He was 11 and a half, but had inoperable cancer, and so this is very much on my mind and illustrates my theme in more ways than I could have envisaged. Many of our friends, neighbours and fellow dog walkers knew what was happening and have been very supportive, both by speaking and also by not speaking about him. Colleagues have been supportive and understanding. What has amazed me has been the response on Facebook. Carraig, and I hope that's pronounced correctly, was a retired rescue dog, and comments and tributes from the search and rescue community have been touching, making us cry, but at the very same time very helpful. My family and friends have also sent messages, as have church colleagues and friends. We have had messages from all over the country, as well as Canada and the Isle of Man. We have been amazed by our connectedness, and all within 24 hours. When I first thought about writing on this theme, it was after taking several family funerals. Obviously, I was connected by family links and by the person we had all come to say goodbye to. But often it was surprising to discover other links: geography, shared interests, events, and even mutual friends. Sometimes I felt an immediate connection, but at other times it was more subtle and emerged in conversation. I belong to the Methodist denomination of the Christian Church, whose organisation in this country is called the Connection, with committees are called Connectional Committees. Conference, where all the connection is represented, or synods, which are smaller regional meetings, are very powerful in the feelings they evoke, especially when singing Charles Wesley's hymns. It's good to feel that connection. Obviously, other denominations have their connecting events as well, and these can be even more powerful when, as Christians, we come together regardless of our denominations. Meeting together, singing, praying and witnessing together in whatever way can draw people in and make them want to feel connected as well. Sometimes we can be connected without actually being together, as our experience with Carraig has shown us. This also applies to Christians in prayer, whether silent or spoken, whether together or distant. Indeed, the effects can be miraculous, of lots of people spread far and wide, praying together on a common theme. That's why we do it. This also applies to other actions besides prayer. Jesus Christ died and rose again to connect his followers through both time and space. And this was written by Rosemary A. Baker.
And now moving on to letters. If you do wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836, emailing news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or writing to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Well, we have 6 letters today, and if we could start with you, please, Nikki.
And this is Anne Gildersleeve, St Cross. Cyclists take lives into their hands. Sir, as a cyclist, I completely empathised with Judith Hennigan on reading her article in last week's Hampshire Chronicle. You take your life into your own hands when you mount a bicycle, Some drivers, when overtaking parked cars on the opposite side of the road, have absolutely no regard for a cyclist's right of way. Nearly every time I cycle into Winchester, a car comes charging towards me, and I am as close as to the curb as possible. Then the other day I was nearly knocked off my bike when a pedestrian suddenly stepped into the road without even looking over his shoulder. When I was at school, we had the green cross code drummed into us. Look right, look left, and look right again before crossing the road. But half the pedestrians in Winchester have obviously not been taught this. Two of my sons have ended up in hospital with broken bones when they had been knocked off their bikes. One in London, when he was cycling past Harrods and a parked car suddenly pulled out, and the other in Cardiff, when a car drove out of a side road into the main road. Nevertheless, living in St. Cross, a bicycle is jolly useful. One can get to the centre of Winchester easily and avoid parking fees, so I shall carry on risking my life for the sake of convenience. Anne Gildersleeve, Cripstead Lane, St. Cross.
And here's another transport-related letter, this time from Ian Henderson, who lives on Badger Farm. And it's headed, "No Easy Answers on the Buses." "Sir, amidst all the commotion about the state and future of Winchester's shabby bus station, I came across a questionnaire asking about people's usage of the various services in the area and ideas for change. I happened across this lengthy document in the Discovery Centre. No copies sent to my home address. It was from the County Council and asked for it to be returned to them ASAP. Money, or a lack of it, is clearly a vital factor in all of this. I can offer one large financial saving to the existing services. I'm lucky enough to be a senior citizen, living right opposite a bus stop in Badger Farm for the number 5 service on its circular route to and from the bus station. The buses come by every 10 minutes on weekdays, or at least they're supposed to, but often arrive 2 or even 3 at a time. This is over the top, as they're mostly empty between 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. Now contrast all that with the axing of most of the number 2 service to and from Oliver's Battery, where only 3 buses operate on weekdays, at 10 a.m, noon and 2 p.m, with the last return service from the city leaving at 1:30 p.m, not much use to those who travel inwards at 2 p.m. Is it not possible to drop some of the unnecessary number 5 to save money and or get a couple to make the brief diversion into the Oliver's Battery area in the afternoons? As for weekends, the tenor of the survey indicated that Sunday services are set for the chop."
This is a letter from the Reverend Mark Bailey, Rector, Lower Deva Benefice, the Rectory, South Wansdon, Winchester. "Where are we to bury our dead? Sir, Usselbury residents are not the only ones faced with the dilemma of a shortage of burial space, as remarked in the Chronicle on May the 1st. This is an issue affecting many communities across the district. Indeed, some have no access to a burial ground at all. Those living in Badger Farm, Harestock, Week, Oliver's Battery and South Wansdon have no provision for what many believe is a basic human right, a place in the community in which to be laid to rest. This impacts not only on the elderly and adult population, but equally affects those who have lost a child. As rector, I have on more than one occasion been asked, 'Where can we bury my child?' The only answer I can give is, 'That is a good question.' The Church of England has, in the past, largely taken responsibility for providing burial facilities for everyone and has done so in such a way as to ensure that it was affordable by all. But the Church is no longer in a position to be able to provide this facility. What is urgently needed is for parish and city authorities to work together to develop a strategy that will address an issue that is not going to go away. Where are we to bury our dead?"
And this from Robert Fowler, Alsford. "Alsford plans will treble traffic. Sir, hardly a week goes by without a letter highlighting the public disappointment and frustration at the irrational planning of roads to and from new housing developments. A prime example is the debacle of the diversion of Andover Road through Barton Farm housing estate, whilst the same concerns have been raised in Alton over new developments. In Alsford, we face a similar problem, with a plan to build 320 houses on greenfield land off Sun Lane. This plan, which will increase the town's population by about 20% in one fell swoop, threatening its whole character, is supported by the Town Council with few caveats. Included is the ridiculous plan for access via an expensive and potentially dangerous new junction off the A31 in the south of the area. This would lead all traffic into a narrow road system, whereas the most sensible approach would be a less expensive and shorter connection to the B3047 Alsford to Bishop Sutton Road. It beggars belief that a plan for so many people and their cars might be considered without planning the infrastructure to go with it. Even more unbelievable is the local authorities' unwillingness to plan the transport needs of the population, and this essential requirement is now apparently left to the developers, who seem to be able to do what they want. If the developers have their way, the traffic generated along Sun Lane, Tichborne Down and Jacklins Lane into Alsford town will treble, causing chaos with school traffic, commuters and shoppers alike. This unpopular housing plan for Alsford is now being considered by Winchester City Council, along with local responses. Before it is too late, all concerned citizens should make their views known about the lack of infrastructure planning and the need for the new housing estate to have a connection to the B3047 before it is too late. Robert Fowler, Sun Hill, Alsford.
And this one's from Peter Moore of Allison Way in Winchester about a very pressing national problem. It's headed, Finding Homes for All the People. Sir, the government hopes to build 15,000 homes around Ebbsfleet, which will help towards easing the housing strain caused by a net migration of over 200,000 in the last 12 months. It won't house them all. You'd need at least three new Ebbsfleets to do that. And then there's all the new arrivals, another 200,000 in the coming 12 months and the 12 months after that. Three new Ebbsfleets a year for the foreseeable future. No wonder there's so much pressure in the UK, and consequently in Hampshire, to find homes for those already here on our overpopulated island. Whatever the government's policy on population is, and does anyone understand it, it has failed. But we have an opportunity. The 2015 election blah blah has started. Before getting our vote, candidates should explain how the party they represent is going to reduce net migration to zero. And at the same time, they can tell us how it's going to encourage intelligent family planning so that every child born has the prospect of a decent life.
Don't build on this lovely green lung, from Cecily Tilly, Westering Romsey. Sir, what an excellent family event was organised by the Save the Wreck campaigners last Sunday. Every part of the park was used for some sport or activity, and local musicians played throughout, contributing to an entertaining and enjoyable afternoon, all at no cost to visitors. Congratulations and thanks to all concerned. Although I live in Romsey, I have watched my grandsons learn to walk, ride their bikes, play tennis and football, climb trees and generally enjoy the fresh air of the wreck as children should. I hope the City Council will think again about building an expensive new leisure centre on any part of this delightful green lung.
And now moving on to historical items, starting with you please, Nikki.
100 years ago, May the 9th, 1914, Suffrage Bill in House of Lords. The division on the motion for the second reading of the Earl of Selborne's Women's Suffrage Bill in the House of Lords took place on Wednesday, when the measure proposed to give the parliamentary franchise to women who already have the municipal franchise was rejected by 104 votes to 60. Among those who voted in the majority were Earls Curzon of Kettleston, North Esk and Waldegrave, while Earls Malmesbury, Portsmouth and Selborne and Barons Basing and Lucas were included in the minority. And the second item, which is a letter. Sir, the county surveyor asks for assistance as follows. namely that cars passing men at work on the road, repairing or tarring same, should be driven quite slowly. The surveyor asked this on account of a recent occurrence when a workman was knocked down and dragged by a car some yards and narrowly escaped with his life. The surveyor points out that in repair work, if there is a steamroller working at the same time, the men cannot easily hear the approach of the traffic.
And now from 50 years ago, palace ruins open to the public. The palace ruins at Bishop's Waltham, one of the most interesting ancient monuments in Hampshire, are to be open to the public for the first time next week. The Ministry of Public Buildings and Works has been consolidating the ruined walls for several years, and the major part of the ruins will be available to the public while work to preserve the rest still continues. Bishop's Waltham Palace was built by Henry of Blois in the 12th century and remained residence of the Bishops of Winchester until its destruction in the Civil War. It was frequently visited by Henry VIII, Cardinal Wolsey and Queen Margaret of Anjou, and it was there that the barons met Henry II and voted supplies for the Second Crusade.
25 years ago, May the 12th, 1989, farmers forced to abandon roots. A shortage of low-cost housing in rural Hampshire is forcing young farmers to abandon their roots and live in the city, a survey by the National Federation of Young Farmers has revealed. As commuters buy up property in rural areas, young people who may have lived in village communities all their lives are being squeezed out, says Annie Carden, the county organiser for the Hampshire branch of the Federation. The problem is acute because people who commute to London can get a London wage compared with young people in a village who may work on a farm for much less, she added. And the second bit. Sir, the weather was glorious and I was working in my front garden when my morning's pleasant weeding activity had to be suspended. The reason? A man-powered machine hurtled along the pavement, spraying a mysterious substance. Before I had discovered that this machine contained a chemical, my eyes, nose and mouth were affected with an unpleasant stinging sensation. After ringing the council to determine the reasons for this machine, I was told that remedial work was being carried out in my area and that this chemical was Dieron 80 and one recommended by the Department of Agriculture. Why is it necessary to spray at all?
And now moving on to first person.
Which is Khalid Aziz, Sense and Sensibility, or Taking Nothing for Granted. A tried and tested way to get people to understand the world of the physically disabled is to get them to spend a day in a wheelchair. Moving about isn't easy. Wheeling a chair on thick pile carpets becomes hard work, and doorways never seem quite large enough. You wince as the paintwork takes a hammering. This discomfort is compounded if you venture out and about. It's amazing how many obstacles there are. Curbs are often high, too high, ramps not in the right place. And those on two legs tend to talk to each other above you, assuming that in addition to your physical disability, you've also lost the power of speech. The famous "Does he take sugar?" line becomes an all too prophetic reality. To lose any one of the senses is tricky. When, 13 years ago, I was afflicted with a facial paralysis, one of the side effects was losing my sense of taste. Gradually it came back, but still not to the same level, and even now I suspect I do not taste as well as I might. But it's okay if you can taste something. I've known people who've lost their sense of taste completely, and they said it's a miserable existence. What of more critical senses? Forced to choose between deafness and blindness, most people apparently, after some thought, go for being blind, as deafness engenders a much more greater sense of being cut off from the world. Either is scary. So it was with some trepidation that I accepted a kind invitation to dine at London's only restaurant in the dark, called Dans le Noir, which sounds like a venue an optimistic French accountant would favour. It's certainly different. You step straight off the street in Clerkenwell into a pretty normal-looking bar area and are invited to choose one of four menus: red, meat; blue, fish; green, veggie; or white, chef's surprise. That's as detailed as it gets. Then you meet your waitress. She's blind. She leads your party, Indian file, hands on each other's shoulders, into the gloom. First into twilight, and then pitch blackness. I have never experienced such dark. You literally couldn't see your hand in front of your face. Your waitress sits you down and places your hands to locate knife, fork, wine, and water glasses. You pour your own water, using a finger in the glass to let you know when it's getting full, but she does the wine. The food arrives. You stoop close to the plate to make sure it reaches your mouth. It was delicious, but you weren't always sure what you were eating. Noise levels were high. It seems we compensate by raising our voices. No wonder people shout at the blind. This is a world where the waiters quite literally are in their element as they bustle about with quiet efficiency. Dinner done, we emerged full of admiration for them and humbled by the experience. Take nothing for granted.
And can we have this week's Bulgarum, please, John?
Certainly. This is headed, as always, an alternative look at the news. Just a couple of pieces from that this week. Subheading, from St. Bede to a BAFTA, Mark is the best of the rest. An ex-Winchester student has been awarded a BAFTA for editing one of the nation's best-loved documentaries. Mark Towns, aged 40, was born in the city and went to St. Bede Primary School, Henry Beaufort College, and then Peter Simmons College, before forging a career in television. On April the 27th, he won a BAFTA Television Craft Award for editing the factual programme Educating Yorkshire. Last year, the nation fell in love with shy, stammering schoolboy Musharraf Ashgar, as he found his voice with the help of his school teacher, Mr. Burton. The programme heartwarmingly documented the moment he strung together a sentence for the first time. Carol Towns of Vernham Road in Wick said she was so proud of her award-winning son, describing him as humble. She said, "It's pretty special, I think. Since 1954, not many of these awards have been given out. He was up against Top Gear and the National Theatre, and the BAFTA team picked the best editor. We're very proud of him, and he's worked really hard." Mark, who's been working in television for almost 20 years, has previously won awards for editing the first two series of The Apprentice. And then further down the page we find a piece about a successful young local man. Headed, "Charlie's Still Their Darling as He Chases His Dream." Winchester's Charlie Steggall, aged 12, is now just one step away from reaching the finals of a national singing competition to find the music stars of tomorrow. Charlie, from Full Flood, was chosen at the regional final of the Teen Star competition in Reading to progress to the penultimate stage of the contest. Singing in front of a live crowd, he impressed with his version of the Bruno Mars hit Grenade. He'll now go head-to-head with acts from as far afield as Sussex and Cornwall in one of five area finals across the country. At stake is the chance to perform in the national final at the NEC in Birmingham in July, and prize money of £5,000. Charlie, who's pictured, a pupil at the Westgate School, is aiming to follow in the footsteps of X Factor finalist Luke Friend, who won last year's Teen Star competition. "It's great to have got this far, and I'd love to make it to the final," said Charlie, son of sports broadcaster Andy Steggall and ITV Meridian's social affairs correspondent Christine Alsford.
Thank you, John. Now, this week's announcements, starting with what's on. At Winchester Cathedral, there's an organ recital on Tuesday the 13th of May at 7:45 p.m. Tickets are £8, including a glass of wine. And if you would like tickets, you can ring 01962 857 275. That's 01962 857 275. And High Society is performing at the Theatre Royal Winchester from the 13th to the 17th of May with a matinee on Saturday. Performances start at 7:30, and for tickets you could ring 01962 840 440. That's 01962 840 440. And the Chesil Theatre in Winchester are performing The Price by Arthur Miller From the 10th to the 17th of May at 7:45, but there is also a matinee. And you can ring 07527 471539 for tickets. That's 07527 471539. And lighting up time ends on Friday the 9th of May at 5:25 a.m. and begins at 8:40 p.m. On Wednesday the 14th of May, it ends at 5:17 a.m. and begins at 8:47 p.m. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. And now we continue with further items of general news, starting with you, please, Nikki.
Breakthrough in hunt for man's killer. Police in India were last week claiming a breakthrough in the hunt for the killer of a Winchester man whose body was found dumped in plastic sheets at the side of the road. They have arrested a tourist tout, believed to have been seen with murder victim Andrew Roddick, 39, the day before he was battered to death. As reported by the Hampshire Chronicle, Mr. Roddick, formerly of Hydegate Hyde, was found dead, his body wrapped in a carpet and plastic bag in a side street in the Bhogal district of the capital, New Delhi, last month. His hands and feet were tied and burns were found on his arms, head and face, most likely from cigarette stubs and a lighter. Indian newspapers were reporting that the suspect has coloured hair and sports a ponytail. He was traced through mobile phone records. The police believe they have also tracked down the guest house where Mr. Roddick was staying. Mr. Roddick, a father of three, is believed to have gone to India in February and visited Goa, Chennai and Mumbai on a tourist visa. He was reportedly seen with the suspect several times, and after accompanying him from the guest house, Mr. Roddick was not seen again until his body was found 17 hours later. An Indian newspaper has reported a source who said that drugs was a line of inquiry. Analysis of the call details of the phone number Mr. Roddick had apparently used in India has shown his acquaintance with some men of African origin. These men are being traced by the police. However, an obstacle is the lack of any CCTV footage, as no cameras were working in the scene of the crime in Bhogal or where Mr. Roddick was staying. The post-mortem report will reveal further details, police say.
This piece is headed New Calls for CCTV Near Club. Antisocial behaviour plagues residents. Residents living near a city centre nightclub have again called for CCTV to be put up to help combat antisocial behaviour. It comes 4 months after the reopening of the Vodka Bar and Nightclub in Upper Brook Street, Winchester, with local residents complaining about noise into the early hours of the morning, amongst other issues on the street, including fast food restaurants. Now they want a security camera installed that will cover the street to help identify people causing disruption. Last week, the Parchment Brooks Residents Association held a meeting attended by about 20 people to discuss how to tackle these issues. Nigel Nimmo said that a camera is necessary to keep the areas safe at night. If a confrontation happens, he said, in that street, there's nothing. If someone gets pushed or an elderly person is out there, we need backup. One of the owners of the club, Lee Davies, attended and said he's keen to help residents. He said, "If you don't come to me, I can't help you out. I'm a resident of Winchester too and I run a business. I gave you my phone number and said for you to call me if there's trouble and you haven't. If you're getting some issues like that, I can get it sorted. I can call my doorman. I don't want you guys getting upset. We want to help out. Inside the premises, we run a tight ship. If we can help you guys outside, we'll do that." Residents called for local businesses to rally in support of putting up a security camera. And the chairman of the Residents Association, Michael Coker Davis, told Mr. Davies, "Politely, we know the noise is coming from you." If we had the cameras there and we can see it wasn't your people, you could prove that, and we could identify the individuals that are causing the problem. We're not asking you to ban your clients. It will be just the half a dozen people that do that. Yes, you expect noise and issues, but at 2, 3, 4 in the morning? We're not trying to nick you every which way, but if we can sort this out, then great. Another resident, Sally Pickles, said she felt ignored when she raised the issue with Winchester City Council. She said, "They don't care. They come in and do 9 till 5 and do not care. I've emailed them and said it's not fitting for Winchester, and they ignored me." Nobody from Winchester City Council was for comment at the time of going to press.
Now we have Mixing Networked with Exercise. A new event combining networking with exercise is to be launched in Winchester and Eastleigh. The first event of its kind, Networking, aims to combine informal business talks with a relaxed and scenic walk, and will be launched at Lakeside Country Park in Eastleigh. Businessmen and women will take part in a 30-minute stroll around the lakes on May the 15th from 7 a.m, followed by a breakfast prepared by the Hungry Workshop. Lizzie Havers, founder of Network for Business, said, "Walking plus healthy eating is a great starting point for anyone looking to improve their health and fitness." Ms. Havers, retrained as a personal trainer, after noticing the need for better health and fitness for people in business, she created Fitness Chrysalis Personal Training and will also soon launch Health and Fitness for Business, a programme to help employees and employers improve health and fitness within their business. For more information, contact Lizzie at 07891 646 667.
Inseparable Couple celebrate 70 happy years. A little bit of give and take and a lot of luck has led to 70 happy years together for an Alsford couple. And despite jointly running a business until their retirement, Jim and Joan White, who have lived in the town since their wedding day on April the 22nd, 1944, said not a day has gone by where they don't want to be around each other. Jim, 91, said, "We worked together when we started up the fencing business, White and Etherington, and we just got on really well. The couple who have lived at their home in Jacqueline's Lane for most of their marriage have two sons, Michael and Christopher, 4 grandchildren and 5 great-grandchildren. Joan, 95, was working in the Women's Land Army when she met Jim, who was in the Navy during World War II. Jim had trained as a joiner at school and worked as an apprentice at Fairheads before he was stationed in Scotland for active service. "I came down from Greenock to get married, and we had 3 days at my sister's bungalow in Nicholson Place for our honeymoon," he said. "Our first house was at Brandy Mount. The houses were basically slums, but they were some of the happiest of our lives, happiest days of our lives." Joan added, "We have been ever so lucky. We have got on, and we have got our 2 boys and our grandchildren and our great-grandchildren. We're just happy, and we've always liked being around each other all the time." Jim added, "I ought to have had a medal for 70 years in service." And there's some lovely photographs of them getting married, him in his sailor's outfit with a rather charming bow at the front, and her in her wedding and her flowers and a veil, and then sitting on a bench together. He's got his arm round her, both smiling, beaming, leaning into each other, obviously as happy as they say in the article.
And here's another happy piece. It's headed, "Choir Going From Strength to Strength." And above it is a picture of about 50 people pulling off the difficult trick of smiling and singing at the same time. A year after it first opened its doors, Winchester Fusion Choir is celebrating the launch of its third group. When the choir first formed last April, it had just 3 members, but now boasts over 50 and has had to open a further 2 sessions to cope with demand. The latest of these started last month and met at the Discovery Centre in Jury Street. Choir leader Mary O'Brien originally started as a singer in the Eastleigh Fusion Choir 3 years ago and moved up the ranks to take over when their leader left. She said that after some encouragement and support from the Eastleigh Choir, which has just celebrated its 5th birthday, she felt confident enough to bring the community group to Winchester. When people come together to sing, they form a community, and that is something amazing, she said. It's incredible when people come out to sing because they feel better. A therapist by day, Mrs. O'Brien leads the group on Fridays at 1:30 p.m. at the Discovery Centre. Then she breaks for an hour and leads the second group at 4 p.m. The choir is holding a charity concert at Milner Hall in St. Peter Street on Saturday, May the 17th. And for more information, go to winchesterfusionchoir.co.uk.
This is a very sad piece, but it's called Alcohol and Drugs Killed Woman 70. A woman from Winchester died after taking a cocktail of prescription drugs and alcohol, an inquest heard. Averill French, who lived in assisted accommodation, was found at her home in King Alfred Place by Winchester City Council Community Support Officer Laura Perez after she received a call from colleagues who had failed to make their daily contact with Mrs. French. Ms. Perez said Mrs. French's health condition required contact to be made with her every day. Ms. Perez said she found Mrs. French on the floor. The first thing I did was to call her and touch her, but she was cold. I called 999, she told the inquest. The inquest heard Mrs. French was prescribed painkillers for long-term back pain and antidepressants for what she had described to her clinical psychologist as a traumatic childhood. Two of her children present at the hearing, twins Russell and Christopher Clegg, confirmed their mother had been hospitalised after giving birth to her first child after taking an overdose. Recording an open verdict, Simon Burge, deputy coroner for Central Hampshire, said, "It is a sad case involving a 70-year-old who had had a troubled history dating back to her childhood. I am satisfied she would have been aware, because of her history, of the risks involved with taking drugs and alcohol."
Show makes an unexpected port of call. It has been billed as a sexy, witty and inventive take on a classic Gilbert and Sullivan work. People in Winchester had a taste of the latest show to hit the Theatre Royal stage, HMS Pinafore, which has taken London's West End by storm with its choreography, libretto and set stage below the deck on a Second World War ship. The entire cast took to the streets to perform snippets of work, all in a bid to promote the show, which is currently running until May the 10th. The story explores the age-old conundrum of love between social classes. For more information, you can either ring the theatre, which hasn't got the number, or go to theatreroyalwinchester.co.uk. And there's a lovely photograph of all the guys, 1, 2, 3, 4, about 10 of them, in blue rolled-up trousers, heavy army boots, beanies and very tight white T-shirts. They look really fit. Wish I'd been there.
Patients in limbo after surgery shots. An orthodontic practice in Winchester has closed, throwing the dental care of more than 1,000 young patients into limbo. The Winchester Centre of Orthodontics in City Road closed last week, with children arriving for appointments to find nothing more than a notice on the door explaining that it had shut. It's understood that the centre had recently received an NHS contract, which was revoked, and since then the firm has retained patients' dental records. One parent of a 15-year-old Perrin school pupil said no notice was given, with the firm practically uncontactable. She said, "Whatever the rights and wrongs of who had the contract, both the NHS and the company are letting the children down. It's shambolic, and they need to sort it out fast." The practice, which was run by the Orthodontic Smiling Centre Association, issued a statement online. "Our priority now is to ensure that your child is able to receive the same level of high-quality NHS orthodontic treatment from another practice. NHS England is currently liaising with other local practices to ensure that your child's treatments are not delayed, and NHS England will be in touch with you very shortly to advise you of the new arrangements.
Euro MP slams arrest of rival. A European MP is claiming the arrest in Winchester of a candidate standing against him in the forthcoming elections was the sort of political arrest usually seen in oppressive regimes. South East MEP Daniel Hannan says while he believes Liberty GB candidate Paul Weston's comments were rude, arresting him on suspicion of religious and racial harassment was a disproportional act of policing. During a speech to a megaphone, Mr. Weston had been reading a Winston Churchill quote describing Islam as militant and retrograde outside Winchester's Guildhall, as reported last week. Mr. Weston addressed passers-by with an excerpt from former Prime Minister Churchill's book The River War, written in 1899 while he was a British Army officer in the Sudan. Police were then called after complaints from members of the public, and the 50-year-old from Dorset was told to disperse, but failed to do so. But while Conservative Mr. Hannan believes his opponent's comments were unpleasant and deliberately provocative, they were not breaking the law, and arresting him was an undemocratic, he said. Sorry, undemocratic. In retrospect, it was a disproportional act of policing. I did not think I lived in a country where a candidate from public office could be arrested at a hustings because someone objected to what he said. It is far from clear to me what law was broken here. It was bad manners, but that is not the same as being against the law. I am not sticking up for Mr. Weston, but the principle is that a candidate in a democracy should be allowed to say whatever he wants, said Mr. Hannan. Mr. Hannan is now calling on Hampshire Police Commissioner Simon Hayes to make his position on the arrest clear. He added, I think there is a real question of whether or not taxpayers in Hampshire want their police to be focusing on this kind of thing or catching criminals. Mr. Hayes said people have the right to debate in public, but said there needed to be a level of decorum and decency. He said, Hampshire Constabulary has an obligation to ensure action is taken if decency or safety is put at risk. But if there is any reason to suspect they have intervened unnecessarily, this will be investigated. Mr. Hayes added he understood that Mr. Weston was not specifically arrested for reciting the Churchill quotes. Mr. Weston is one of three Liberty GB candidates standing to represent the South East as MEPs.
Review of the Winchester Dialogues, headed From Local Chorister to International Correspondent. In the latest Winchester Dialogue, John Snow traced his journey from choirboy to chief anchorman of Channel 4 News via some of the hottest trouble spots across the world over the last half century. In conversation with John Miller, he talked of the major influences on his life, singing with the Winchester Cathedral Choir, as a VSO volunteer in Uganda, being sent down from Liverpool University for leading an anti-apartheid sit-in of the administration building and breaking into broadcasting via LBC and ITN. His packed audience hung on his words as he described interviewing those murderous tyrants Idi Amin and Slobodan Milosevic, confessing that he was sorely tempted to murder them both, excuse me, before thinking better of it. He was present at such world-changing moments as the election of Pope John Paul II, which he described as prizing the first brick out of the Berlin Wall, the Reagan-Gorbachev summits, which resulted in the whole of that wall coming down, and the release of Nelson Mandela from his South African prison. Like all the best speakers, he leavened these serious stories with witty asides, comparing interviewing Margaret Thatcher to being chastised by a matron at school, and the papal election to an elaborate CIA operation led by the American cardinals. The Winchester Dialogues are steadily growing in their appeal, with the Dean up on May the 16th, and more to come in the autumn with Sir Mark Tully, the Bishop of London, Archbishop Rowan Williams, and John Simpson, rescheduled from his postponed February date when the BBC dispatched him that day to the Crimea. John Snow said he was occasionally mistaken for John Simpson, but lucky for Winchester, he was not also sent to the Ukraine.
Next piece is headed Cyclists in the Saddle for a Personal Cause. And below that headline, we see eight fit-looking chaps on bicycles grinning broadly at us from a bridge over the River Itchen, by the look of it. It begins. 12 cyclists from Southern Water took part in an epic ride to raise money for charity. Staff from the operations team of the company raised £4,000 for the Hampshire Asbestos Support and Awareness Group, HASAG, by riding from Otterbourne to Bristol in a day. Despite a puncture, a minor fall and a wrong turn, which added 10 miles to the 80-mile trip, they've reached the finishing line in just under 8 hours. Distribution manager Glenn Stock, who organised the ride, said the cause meant a lot to him and his colleagues, as each of them had had friends or relatives who'd been affected by the disease. He said, "It was tough, but absolutely delightful, and we thoroughly enjoyed doing it, even though we ended up doing nearer 90 miles than 80. We all trained for it, and that really paid dividends. Now we're thinking of doing London to Paris while we're all still fit." Kevin Buck, who coordinates the company's charity activities, said, "We're very pleased to support this cause, particularly as it's relevant to our industry. And we're glad that our enthusiastic cyclists chose to use their volunteer days so well. It was a great effort by them, reflected in the tremendous amount of cash they raised. Nearly £3,000 was raised in sponsorship, with a £1,000 boost from Southern Water."
Scout service is Dame Mary's last. A service looking at life as a scout during the First World War is coming to Winchester. Young scouts will be displaying their history at Winchester Cathedral. They will put on displays showing what scouting activities and camps would have looked like from 1910 to 1914, as well as perform period music with the Fareham Guides Group. There will also be a display showing activities at Wolf Cub camps from 1919 to 25, and a performance from the Basingstoke Gang Show, a singing and dancing group. The event will be Scout President Dame Mary Fagan's last as Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire, and amongst those attending will be the Very Reverend James Atwell, Dean of Winchester Cathedral, and the Bishop of Southampton, the Right Reverend Jonathan Frost. A service for Dame Mary with the theme Reconciliation and Peace will begin at 7:30 p.m. The display will begin at 6:45 p.m. And all activities will end by 8:50 p.m. on Friday, May the 9th.
A rocking good time at the fair. It was a day for bunting, doilies, extra wide petticoats and a whole lot of swing for the Winchester Vintage Parade. More than 1,000 went to the Guildhall for the market stalls and entertainment, swishing their polka dot dresses to the sound of a bygone age. Amy Baker and Lady and the Dukes performed renditions of some post-war classics, while Jive 92 took to the floor to demonstrate how to dance to 50s and 60s music. Best dress prizes and rosettes were presented to the finest threads of the day. Inside the Makers Market, talented local illustrators, upcyclers and makers showcased their current work, and the tea parlour provided a warm area to get out of the rain. The Vintage Parade will return to Winchester with a wedding fair on Sunday, June the 8th, and again for the Vintage and Makers Fair on Sunday, November the 16th. And there's a photograph of a lady in a large flared skirt, obviously dancing the rock and roll.
Visitors flock to Spring Rally. As the only surviving complete Edwardian waterworks, it's no surprise people want to learn more about its 114-year history. The Twyford Waterworks on Haseley Road hosted a Spring Rally last Sunday, with more than 400 people attending to view the 60 visiting exhibits and find out more about the historic pumping station, now run completely by volunteers. The Friends of King Alfred's Buses, which preserves and maintains the fleet of vehicles that once worked in Winchester, ran a regular service from Winchester Railway Station and the Broadway to the waterworks to transport visitors. Matthew Feldwick, the event organiser, said it was a great example of two small charities working together. He said, "It was a superb day. It was an absolute cracker of a rally, one of the best we've ever had. We had in excess of 400 people, which for a tiny venue is pretty good going. We had 60 visiting exhibits, from steam traction engines to vintage vehicles. It's a very positive day, and I look forward to the rest of the season." The rally included guided tours of the pumping station and the chance to see vintage machinery at work, with steam, diesel, petrol, gas and water-powered engines all in operation.
And this is another glorious day. Underneath a lovely colour photograph of children with plates on sticks, we find that four marked primary school children spent the day learning new circus techniques, including plate spinning and juggling, from the experts from Cirque Normandie. In a bid to raise as much money as possible, children spent the week prior showcasing their talents, ready for a day of tombolas, toffee apples and the big top. Recent cuts in funding have meant the school's current budget only allows for ongoing maintenance rather than further development, prompting the fundraiser. Assistant Head Amy Cox said, "The children of Four Marks had a magnifique time with visiting Cirque Normandie, with non-stop fun for everyone. It has been a wonderful opportunity for children to experience different skills that are not part of the everyday curriculum."
Holocaust survivor touches students with his testimony. Heartbreak and History came to life as A2 history students heard a first-hand account from a Holocaust survivor. Walter Kammerling, who at the age of 15 witnessed the events of November 1938, when Jewish synagogues, shops, businesses and homes were attacked across Germany and Austria, spoke to Barton Peveril College students as part of the Lessons from Auschwitz project. The scheme, aimed at 16 to 18-year-olds, offers an insight into the realities of history and aims to honour the memory of those whose lives were lost, while taking forward lessons taught by those who survived. Mr. Kammerling called on the audience of teenagers, Eastleigh MP Mike Thornton, staff and guests, to never shy away from the reality of prejudice. "Everyone has his or her prejudices. The only difference is how we deal with them. It means going against the stream, going against the peer pressure, but it's worth it." The 90-year-old's parents and eldest sister were murdered by the Nazis at Auschwitz a few months before the camp's liberation in 1945, and Mr. Thornton said he was deeply touched by this testimony. Walter Kammerling's story was incredibly powerful and served as a vital reminder of the horrific brutality of the Nazi regime. His personal account, his remaining pain at the loss of his entire family, and his paramount desire to ensure that we all counter hatred was truly inspiring. I urge anyone who is given the opportunity to take the Holocaust Educational Trust trip to Auschwitz to do so. Mr. Thornton accompanied students on a visit to the infamous death camps last autumn, and as a picture of Walter Kammerling and Jade Bone, with Mike Thornton, the MP, and Jess Asprey. Jade and Jess are Holocaust Educational Trust ambassadors.
And here's a News in Brief piece about a significant local issue. It's headed, 2,000 lorries caught speeding by police. Hampshire police say they will continue to target speeding truckers after more than 2,000 were caught during a week-long crackdown. Officers across the county took part in a Europe-wide attempt to make the roads safer by taking action against lorry drivers found flouting the limit. Truckers pulled over by police were reminded of the dangers caused by lorries travelling too fast. Sergeant Rob Hurd said, "Excessive or inappropriate speed has a devastating impact on the safety of road users, increasing both the risk of a crash and the severity of consequences. Hampshire Constabulary is committed to increasing road safety and will continue to target those who fail to abide by speed limits and deal with them either by education or prosecution."
This next piece is called Winchester's Hidden Treasures and is underneath a beautiful photograph of Parchment Street from 1900. Wander away from Winchester High Street and you will discover a unique retail offering boasting independent stores, chic boutiques and designer treasure troves, alongside exclusive cafes, established restaurants and vibrant galleries. Parchment Street can be found just off the High Street between WH Smith's and Phase 8. This attractive boutique shopping area is proud to host an eclectic mix of specialist retailers alongside well-known practitioners. You will find plenty of hidden treasures from Fuzzy Stocking, Whole Foods and... from Fuzzy Stocking, Whole Foods and Health Foods, Ocean Boulevard Living with stunning homeware to designer hair salon Guy Creamer. Taste the vast variety of Italian and world wines at Toscanuccio. Sit back with a latte and watch the world go by from Nicola's Tea Shop. Enjoy the striking pieces of art on display at Bell Fine Art. Nestled among the assortment of tempting boutiques is Justice Jewellers, who specialise in daring, quirky, unique designs created with exquisite quality. Wander further to find Boudoir Blush, designer lingerie boutique. Their service is next to none, with expert fitters ensuring you leave feeling amazing and properly taken care of. The store features brands such as Bjorn Borg, L. Macpherson, C. Folly and Panache, just to name a few. Tag is one of the newest additions to the street, an ultra-stylish store whose owners have a passion for hand-picking the very best pieces from leading independent designers within the UK. Parchment Street is the ideal place to explore and add a creative touch to your shopping experience. You'll be certain to find a special something for the one you love, or create the perfect excuse to treat yourself.
Seniors subject their MP to a good grilling. Actually, can we start that again? Seniors subject their MP to a good grilling. Winchester Member of Parliament, Steve Brine, faced a barrage of questions when he visited South Wanston Seniors Club. Topics on the agenda included immigration, the future of Scotland, foreign aid, the next general election, controversial planning wind farms for the area and flooding. This is one of the most active clubs in the area, and I know they want to do even more, which can only be a good thing, he said. I hope they enjoyed putting me through my paces as much as I enjoyed the often lively debate we had. And there's a wonderful photograph of all the club, South Wanston Seniors Club, with their arms in the air, smiling and beaming, and a rather charming old golden Labrador. Not quite sure whose that was, but definitely took part in the conversation.
Picture above this next piece of the area just by the high altar in Winchester Cathedral, with lots and lots of young children sitting in the pews there and obviously enjoying the venue and having a good time. It's headed Organ Scholars for a Day. School children from across Hampshire were treated to a day in Winchester Cathedral learning about a historical instrument. Some 130 pupils from seven schools, including Cheriton, Stanmore, Ropley, Four Marks and Sunhill Primaries, spent the day learning about the pipe organ. Led by cathedral organist Andrew Lumsden, activities included a session with Jeremy Sampson of Wooden One Octave Organ for Young Technologists, a singing session, a tour of the cathedral, and the chance to play the chamber organ in a workshop with the Royal College of Organist Director Simon Williams. Colin Harvey, Chairman of Winchester and District Association of Organists, said it's so rare for children to hear a pipe organ these days, and yet it's the oldest keyboard instrument. In fact, the ancient Greeks invented the keyboard for the pipe organ. Learning about music and mechanics of the organ helps our children's learning in so many ways. It's music, it's science, history and art, and it can also be fun. We hope to run similar events in the future aimed at different age ranges. The day saw input from the Royal College of Organists, Winchester and District Association of Organists, Hampshire Music Service, the University of Winchester and Winchester Cathedral.
UKIP targets district seats in local poll. UKIP is making its strongest challenge yet in the Winchester local elections. The anti-European Union Party is putting up 11 candidates in the 19 contests in the Winchester City Council election, a district which stretches from Mitchell Deva to the edges of Portsmouth. Its intervention could be important, as the council is currently hung with the Conservatives and Lib Dems, both on 27 seats, Labour on 2 and Independents on 1. At the last City Council election in 2012, UKIP put up no candidates, 2 in 2011 and none in 2010. UKIP is mainly contesting rural seats, and is only fighting 2 in the 6 Winchester City wards during the election on May 22nd. Meanwhile, the Greens are only contesting 1 seat, while the Trade Unionist and Socialist Coalition are fighting 2. Former council leader Sheila Campbell is again contesting Swanmore and Newton. Karen Barrett, a former Lib Dem, is standing as an independent in the St Paul ward. Adrian Hicks, who memorably went public in 2009 with the sighting of an extraterrestrial in the High Street in 2004, is standing as an independent in St John and All Saints. He resigned from the Lib Dems in 2011. Overall, the Lib Dems are defending 9 seats and the Conservatives 10. Several senior councillors are standing down. Council leader Keith Wood and portfolio holder for housing Tony Coates, both Tories, former Mayor Ray Pearce and fellow senior Lib Dem Brian Collin. The Labour candidates include 2 veterans, David Picton-Jones and Elaine Fulloway, who have been candidates around 20 times previously. Former retained Winchester firefighter Clive Gosling is standing in St John and All Saints ward.
PAL's big jump for smaller charities. Daredevils from Winchester took to the skies for a hair-raising charity challenge. 4 members of the Winnell Social Club and the bar manager recently completed a parachute jump in aid of small local charities. Lottie Forder, director and treasurer of the club, said it is something they have always wanted to do. We said we would pay for the 4 members, but they had to raise £500 or more for a local charity, she said. We wanted to do it for someone local, because there are a lot of big charities around Winchester, but the smaller ones don't always receive much support. They have all hit the £500 mark. To choose the lucky 4 jumpers, names were all drawn from a hat, and although bar manager Steve Statham's name wasn't pulled, his employer UTL agreed to sponsor him. He was joined by Sasha Clements, 22, Simon Williams, 24, Craig Barnaby, 42, and Julie Payne, 51. Mother of one, Sasha, raised money for the Special Care Baby Unit, Simon for Friends of Osborne School, Craig for Lanterns Children's Centre, and Steve for St John's Preschool, and Julie for Triangles Preschool. And as a photograph of them all, beaming into the camera with their arms held out in a sort of fist of power. More power to them for doing it, I say.
Some good news for people travelling by bus from the Aylesford area. And it's headed, Axed Bus Route to be taken on by operators. Bus operator Velvet is giving up the route that serves the Aylesford area. Eastleigh-based Velvet will stop running the 67 service from Petersfield, Cheriton, Aylesford to Winchester from next Monday, May the 12th, but the service will be taken up by Stagecoach and Zellabus. Velvet Managing Director Phil Stockley blamed the winter flooding, which disrupted services and led to passengers finding different ways of travelling. Mr Stockley said Velvet would fulfil its obligations until May the 12th, and he said the timetable would not be identical, but be very similar when it came out in its new form. Richard Farrer of Cheriton, who has children at Perrin School and Peter Simmons College in Winchester, said he was unhappy at the timing and the way the issue had been handled by Hampshire County Council, which subsidises the service. Mr Farrer said, "I think communication has been poor, and while I sympathise that it is something that's ongoing, The timing is highly unfortunate. There doesn't seem to be a great deal of sympathy from Hampshire with regard to students and their examination timetables. A Hampshire County Council spokesman said, "From Monday, May the 12th, the school service from Petersfield to Perrin School will no longer be run by Velvet after they gave notice to terminate their contract. However, Hampshire County Council has awarded a new contract to Zellabus, which will start on May the 12th. Children who receive bus passes from the council will be issued with new ones, and until all of the new passes have been issued, the old ones will remain valid. Velvet took over the 67 route in 2012 as part of expansion plans into the Aylesford, Petersfield and Basingstoke areas. Jackie Porter, the Lib Dem prospective MP, said she was pleased a Sunday service has been restored along the 67 route for the summer too, courtesy of a partnership with the South Downs National Park.
And here we have a nice cheerful piece called Cricket Club Bowled Over by Catering Company Sponsorship. The icing is well and truly on the cake for young sports stars near Winchester. The junior cricket at Easton and Martha Worthy Cricket Club is celebrating after securing the financial backing of Easton-based event catering company Creative Catering and Marquees. The sponsorship deal, which is vital to maintaining the club's success, was renewed for the second year running, and the junior organiser Adrian Lee said the club is pleased. He said, "We are hugely grateful to Kay and her company, which secures the future of our junior cricket. To celebrate, cricketers from the club's under-9 teams enjoyed cupcakes last weekend, and Kay Thompson, founder and director of Creative Catering and Marquees, said it is a club close to her heart. My father and brother used to play at EMWCC, and now our son is a keen junior player too," she said. "So I'm delighted to continue to support junior cricket and be part of this vibrant and successful club. As well as its teams playing in the Winchester Warriors League, the club also has a programme of winter and summer training with its England and Wales Cricket Board qualified coaches." And there is a marvellous photograph of all the junior cricketers in chef's hats and aprons, madly eating their cupcakes.
Generous support for Centre. A struggling centre which provides essential support to disabled people is on course to survive after receiving £130,000 in donations from the public. The Rainbow Centre in Fareham supports children suffering with cerebral palsy and adults born with severe neurological impairment. Among those who use its services are Andrew and Joe Sivrett from Otterbourne. Their 6-year-old daughter, Jemima, is currently recuperating from specialist surgery to help her walk unaided in the future. The centre launched a crisis appeal in March following the threat of closure. It aims to raise £150,000 to keep its services running and has been given £129,000 in just 4 weeks. Director Lara Bull said, "The support has been absolutely overwhelming, both by the speed and level of support. We would like to say a huge thank you to everyone who has contributed. We are extremely grateful for your support. For those of you that are thinking of supporting us, we would urge you to help, as your donation could make a massive difference to many people's lives, both now and in the future. To donate, text RBOW21 and the donation amount to 70070, or probably easier, call 01329 289 500, 01329 289 500.
Winchester history with an emphasis on the people. The masterminds behind Winchester Tourist Guides have said they are thrilled with sales of their first book. More than 500 copies of Bloody British History, Winchester, have been sold since its release last Christmas, with the project supported by local bookshops, including independent store P.G. Wells. Four authors clubbed together to tell the disturbing journey of the city's past, from hangings, burnings, kings and tyrants, to wars and disease. And these authors are Don Bryan, Geraldine Buchanan, Claire Dixon and James King, all of Winchester Tourist Guides, which has been welcoming and guiding visitors around the city whilst giving talks and running history courses now for over 35 years. Chairman of Winchester Tourist Guides and one of the authors, Claire Dixon, said they're hoping to raise as much money for charity as possible. She said, "All of the royalties from the book go to charities, including the Mayor of Winchester's. The more we sell, the more money we can raise for charity. But we also feel our book helps to fill a gap, as it's been some time since any general history of Winchester has been published, especially one with an emphasis on the people rather than the city's buildings. It's been written by a group of people who've been studying and absorbing the history of Winchester for decades, and it contains fresh material that has not appeared in previous accounts of the city for centuries. The book was launched by the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Ernie Jeffs, and he said, "I've read the book and I found it fascinating. The incidents were quite pertinent and colourful and makes one want to delve deeper into Winchester's history." And that piece is accompanied by a picture of the four authors, the Mayor and his Lady Mayoress, and all of them except the Mayor are holding copies of the book, and he's holding a copy. He's holding a bottle of champagne. We'll read nothing into that.
Now we go from history to something very current. Villagers' anger over boomtown traffic plan. Call for urgent talks over safety concerns. Villagers may seek compensation for disruption caused by a planned rerouting of heavy traffic throughout their streets. Usselbury Parish councillors say they are extremely concerned about boomtown organisers' plans to direct traffic from the M3 through Twyford, Morstead Road and past Usselbury with the aim of easing congestion along the A31 from Junction 9. The parish councillors said that unless boomtown responded to their worries, they will consider taking up the issue with Winchester City Council and may even consider claiming compensation amid fears that the 70-plus coaches and 750 camper vans will cause serious problems. Councillor Paul Phillips said, "We've read all the details, but it's quite obvious they haven't done their job. There's two black spots along that route that are being used by traffic movement, and it's plain stupidity. They have no idea what they're doing, and the more I read, the hotter I get. What about compensation? It seems a bit dramatic, but it is relevant. We are exceedingly concerned about this issue." Further issues were raised regarding the clarity of the plans, with some councillors stating the lack of communication had only caused more confusion. Councillor Will Martin said, "Nobody has talked to people on the ground. They are just trying to spread the grief around. This whole plan is badly thought through. They call themselves traffic management experts, but any of us could do a better job." Councillor Roger Page said, "I think it's quite dangerous, and I would suggest that they do a run with a coach to assess the feasibility of what they are trying to do before the actual date of boomtown." Councillors decided to have a direct meeting with their counterparts in Twyford, as well as boomtown and their traffic management team, CMT. Chairman John Chapman said, "Everything is so unclear at the moment that we've got to give them one more chance to talk to us about what is going on. I think it's very important we get them to understand the level of concern here. Let's get a better understanding about what's going on and why, and then tell them why we don't think it's going to work as it is. And if they don't listen, we'll take it to Winchester City Council. We've got some time now before this happens. If we feel totally despondent, we can also write to the police commissioner." A spokeswoman for boomtown said, "We fully appreciate that the proposed bus routes through Usselbury and Twyford have raised some concerns. These plans have not been finalised, and we are working alongside Winchester City Council to take on board the criticism and feedback from the local community to devise a plan that people feel is safe and workable. Residents can contact us anytime via our local community at boomtownfair.co.uk.
City honours are promised never to forget. A memorial plaque and two information boards have been unveiled as part of Winchester's To Honour and Promise project. The plaque on Quarry Road remembers the headquarters of the First World War Cycling Unit, which was disbanded in the 1920s, and the information boards at the Mourne Hill Butterfly Reserve show how the site would have looked when 2 million men passed through on their way to the frontline duties in Europe. Both were unveiled by the Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire, Dame Mary Fagan, along with the Mayor and Mayoress, Councillor Ernie and Barbara Jeffs, and the project's director, David Harrison. Mr. Harrison said it is important to teach people about the city's heritage. He said, "I think it is important that future generations understand the freedom that they enjoy is down to the people that were prepared to die for it. One of the most pleasing things is the involvement of the youth. They have been really involved. We have been working towards these events for several years, and it is very exciting to see our project coming to life. Children from All Saints Primary School have also taken part, making crocheted poppies at the Winchester Discovery Centre earlier this year. On June the 23rd, a permanent memorial will be unveiled at Castle Yard and an exhibition launched at the Great Hall. And there's a lovely photograph of the information board with four of the primary school pupils beaming away, and obviously Tony Dowland and the guests, and all with their umbrellas up, obviously one of those rainy days we've been having lately.
Energy Group meets to plan future strategy. Hampshire Renewable Energy Cooperative has held its first members and supporters meeting in Winchester. Members of the HREC, a cooperative for local renewable energy generation projects in Hampshire, were invited to attend a free evening where they had the opportunity to meet other supporters from around the country. The projects include the bitterly opposed wind farms near Bullington Cross and in the Candover Valley, both north of Winchester. Opponents say the wind farms damage the environment and are not cost-effective. The meeting at the United Church in Jury Street saw people from all corners of Hampshire taking the chance to learn about the cooperative's aims, campaigns and recent activities. After a presentation about the co-op's activities, there was debate and discussion about future activities. A new communications and marketing team will update the website, and it was agreed that the co-op should focus on creating new renewable energy generation facilities. Martin Heath, the HREC director, said, "We were particularly impressed by the amount of enthusiasm amongst the membership for us to press forward with some of our smaller scale projects, as well as the high levels of continued and sustained support we have for the proposed Bullington Cross wind farm." HREC was set up to create a range of renewable energy generation facilities throughout Hampshire, and these facilities will be cooperatively run for community benefit. Mr. Heath added, "It's imperative for the future of the co-op and green energy in Hampshire that we find more supporters to join in with a variety of community events across the county this year. We'd welcome invitations from event organisers for us to exhibit and give talks at local events about renewable energy."
Now I have another cheerful one. Fun and Games at NCT Fundraiser. The sound of children laughing and playing filled the air at an event to raise money for a charity that supports parents. The National Childbirth Trust held its annual Family Fun Day at Lanterns Children's Centre on Bearweek Road and raised more than £5,000 for Winchester's Babies and Breastfeeding Information Encouragement Support, or BABIES. It included a mobile farm, face painting, a magician, and an inflatable planetarium with shows led by an expert from the Winchester Science Centre. Organiser Rachel Hardy said more than 600 people attended and that more than £5,300 had been raised. Winchester MP Steve Ryan attended with his family, and there's a lovely photograph of Steve Bryan and lots of mums and dads and children and babies, obviously on a lovely day, looking very happy.
And that concludes the extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors, Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. And thanks to our copying and dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And thank you also to our readers, Nikki Baring.
Goodbye.
John Regan.
Bye-bye.
Lynn Parker.
Goodbye.
And from me, Maria Head, goodbye and do have an enjoyable week. When you have finished with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.